Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, at our politics website, we called it It's a Free Country because Americans cherish our freedom as a first principle, perhaps more than anything else. In a country born of fighting for our freedom from British colonialism, followed by a century of slaves fighting for their freedom within the country, we are a nation for which freedom is at the heart of our value system. Later, when President Franklin Roosevelt wanted to fight the rampant inequalities inherent in modern capitalism, he coined his four freedoms, including freedom from want. Ayn Rand objectivists believe government action to free people from want impinge on their central value, freedom of the individual, unless he or she is using force against another. The Tea Party constantly uses the word freedom. We also see freedom as a central notion in our foreign policy. Look no further than the current deployment in Libya to see how support for freedom abroad mingles often uncomfortably with some of our other values and interests, but can win the day in the most difficult decision a president has to make, whether to go to war. So if freedom isn't a first principle worth debating, nothing is. It is relevant to today's most important news stories, from Yemen to Wisconsin, from the Mideast to the Midwest. Maybe if we can sort out which freedoms matter the most as first principles, we can make progress on all the other important decisions that gridlock and divide us. So freedom will be the topic of our second first principles debate this Thursday night at 6 o'clock in a free event that I'll be moderating between the folks from Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute at the Skirball Center at NYU on LaGuardia Place. You can get free tickets to that event through our politics website. We ask that you reserve your seat at itsafreecountry.org. And we're going to preview that debate a little bit right now with both of the participants. Benjamin Barber, political theorist, distinguished senior fellow at Demos and president of what they call Civ World, author of books including I'm forgetting the name of your
Jihad versus McWorld.
Jihad versus McWorld.
And Strong Democracy for the purposes of this discussion.
Right. And Harry Binswanger, a longtime associate of Ayn Rand herself, received his PhD in philosophy from Columbia University. During the 1980s, he was editor of the Objectivist Forum, a bimonthly journal devoted to Rand's philosophy. Since 1994, he's been professor of philosophy at the Objectivist Academic Center of the Ayn Rand Institute. So Benjamin Barber, welcome back. And Harry Binswanger, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Thank you, Brian.
And where do we start? You have each written op-eds on It's a Free Country. And listeners, I draw your attention to that, too, especially if you're interested in coming out on Thursday night. The discussion has begun online with postings on freedom from both Ben and Harry. And you wrote, the debate about freedom is really a debate about how we define human nature. Ben, why?
Well, because freedom, like so many political concepts, equality, justice, democracy, is what philosophers call deeply or essentially contested. Meaning we could sit all day here and argue about free will. Is it freedom to? Is it freedom from? Is it freedom within politics? Freedom against politics? But generally speaking, when you look back underneath what people say about freedom, you find a view about human nature. And what I want to suggest is that the fundamental question, therefore, is about the nature of man and whether we're essentially solitary individuals who, when we are free, are separate from others and separate from the state, or whether we are embedded social beings, political animals, as Aristotle said, species being, as Marx said, who are embedded and who therefore have to find freedom in the context of their social relationships. So freedom is something we win within and through social relationships in society. So I'd suggest the beginning place for me, that's the debate rather than an abstract debate about free will.
Harry, is that where we need to start with freedom? I know one of the questions that the Rand folks are interested in discussing at some point is, are we our brother's keeper? And so that would locate it in that realm of individual autonomy versus are we, you know, living in a social context. So what do you think about that as a starting
place? Well, I think Ben is going deeper than are we our Brother's Keeper. He's going to the question, do we have free will? Can we act independently? The view that we don't have free will is self-contradictory. No one can say, I don't have free will. Everything that I say and do is forced upon me by society, my background, or whatever. I have no idea whether what I'm saying is true or false. If a person says that, if he says, I say what I am determined by society to say, I think what I'm determined by society to think, then he invalidates himself right out of his own mouth. So objectivism, Ayn Rand, is very strong defender of free will, and that is, Ben is entirely right, that is the base and meaning of independence and autonomy. The individual makes his own character, is responsible for himself because he doesn't have to conform to the thinking of those around him.
Now, listeners, we're going to open up the phones on this. We can get abstract or we can get very concrete. When you think of the term freedom, let's do free association, but instant free association. Folks, call us up right now, and when you hear the word freedom, what comes to mind? 212-433-WNYC. What do you most associate with freedom? 212-433-9692. Or if you've ever used the term, that's the title of our politics website, it's a free country. You ever say, well, it's a free country. What did you mean? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Harry, are political freedom and economic freedom in conflict with each other?
No, they're two aspects of the same thing, which is the absence of coercive interference. If you believe that the individual can think for himself, it's wrong for anyone to use force against him because that stops him from using his own mind. So there are two ways of dealing with each other, mind respecting or mind negating.
But by force,
and
you
economic
include...
freedom, it means you have to respect people's minds when they make their financial decisions.
Can we back up? I mean, I raised the question of whether we're socially embedded or solitary and whether we see ourselves in terms of freedom. Harry immediately moved to the notion that that must mean that I don't believe in free will. He does. We both believe in free will. We both believe in freedom. And I think we both agree that freedom is freedom from force. The question is freedom something you have as a solitary being separated from society or something you win and gain and achieve within social relationships? And that goes directly to the question of what force is. Government represents one form of force. Capitalism in the market represents another form of force. There are all sorts of forces in our world. One of the mistakes that libertarians make, and I know objectivists don't like to be called libertarians, but they sound a lot like them, is that they think that coercion and government are synonymous, and basically to be free is to be free from government. I would argue quite the contrary, that government is a form of force, but it's legitimate force, force that is consensual, force that we, through a social compact, have become part of when we vote for people. So the fact is, for me, there are all sorts of forces operating in a so-called free market society, whether you call it marketing, whether you call it the social organization, whether you call it the ability to get jobs or not, education, that affect our freedom. And my feeling is that the objectivists only want to talk about the state because Ayn Rand only wanted to talk about the state, and they only talk about what she talks about, and refuse to talk about the kinds of forces that operate elsewhere in society that can also rob us of the precious free will both Harry and I believe in.
Well, Ayn Rand drew a distinction that goes right to the issue you raised. You put your finger right on the central issue, three central issues now. This is the third. The difference between economic power and political power. Political power, the power of the government, is the power to force, physically force, not advertise, not make offers, but to grab hold of you, throw you in jail, ultimately to execute you. Economic power, the power that progressives want to protect against, is the power to make you an offer, which you do not have to accept. It's
or
the power
refuse.
To offer you things, to say things to you, to persuade you. What was that?
Or an offer you can't refuse, as a famous place.
No, that's exactly it. That was the mafia. The offer you can't confuse was refuse. Cutting off the head of a person's racehorse. That is physical force. There's a big distinction between the dollar and the gun.
Yeah, but again, we want to come back to the issue of degrees of force, kinds of force. I agree with you that there is no force more palpable, more dangerous than physical force, which is why governments have to get legitimacy and consent for its use. The problem is that I agree with you that in the marketplace, there are less threatening forms of force, but unlike with government, they're totally illegitimate because people like you pretend they're not there, pretend they don't really affect people, pretend that that's just making us offers. I don't think the marketing industry would spend billions and billions of dollars if all it thought it was doing was extending the range of your options. It's trying to get, and they wouldn't advertise to one-year-olds and two-year-olds and try to push them to do things. They are trying to pervert and distort free will and get brand loyalty from people who, fortunately, because as we both agree, they have free will, often resist. But the aim of marketing is not increasing your options, but getting you to buy things that people need and want you to buy.
Yes, by addressing arguments to your mind, not a bullet to your brain.
To one-year-olds and two-year-olds? Arguments to the mind?
I'm not aware of that much marketing to one-year-old.
Are you aware of some marketing to them, though?
This is not the issue. We're not here to debate children's advertising.
But it's not just about marketing to the consumers, the potential customers. It's also about the relationship between corporations and government, right? So if Ben, you know, maybe you want to bring this in. If we're talking about limitations on freedom, and there are people who feel that they are less free because corporations have too much power, I don't think it's that they feel they have to buy the product. I think it's that they feel the policy is being tilted.
Well, I don't want to give up that other side, but I will shift back over. If indeed we think that government is the coercive element, then why do we allow private corporations, in effect, to buy government? Because that means then the coercive force of government becomes indirectly the coercive force of corporations working through government. So a Supreme Court decision like Citizens United that says corporations are people and they should be able to use the money any way they want continues to distort government. And to that extent, maybe you and I can agree that government, when it is owned wholesale by corporations, doesn't use its power legitimately and in terms of popular consent, but uses it in terms of corporate wishes and corporate coercion.
Yes, government favors subsidies, protection for corporations is as wrong as government favors protection subsidies for labor unions or for any other group or individual in society. But Citizens United, I was very much in favor of as a concrete decision. The solution is the complete separation of the government from economics. Make the government have no favors to dispense. Don't allow them to give subsidies. Don't allow them to make tariffs. Don't allow them to have antitrust regulations. If you completely separate them, make the government the protector against criminals and foreign invaders, and that's it.
So, Harry, would you then
want there's us, there's no collusion between business.
Would you want us to go back to, say, the 1870s and 1880s and the Gilded Age, the age of what Teddy Roosevelt called the malefactors of great wealth, who in effect are unregulated and can destroy not just democracy but destroy capitalism by eliminating the competition, which is capitalism's greatest virtue? And, of course, what happens when capitalism is unregulated is that it doesn't just go after democracy. It ends up destroying the competitive foundations of capitalism, which are its greatest virtue, no?
Yeah, I would go, no, it's not its greatest virtue. It's not a virtue at all, but it's a positive factor. I would go back to 1776, but certainly the Gilded Age, as it's should be called the Age of Innovation, was a wonderful time for the capitalist system, and it was the period of the fastest economic growth in the history of the world. And the most benevolent kind of society right up until World War I, when people like Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson changed us to a progressive social system. So, yes, I want to go back to complete protection of rights.
More benevolent, you said. Use the word benevolent.
Right.
Before the progressive era reforms.
Yes. Absolutely.
So the Gilded Age was, well, I mean, I don't know what you say to somebody who thinks that the Gilded Age and the age of monopolies is a great age of capitalism.
Before we had wage
capitalism
and hour laws, labor
much
laws.
Much more benevolent. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, again, at some point it's a little hard to have an argument here because the positions consistent, I will agree, that are taken by folks from the Ayn Rand Institute are so far out, so far away from anything that most Americans, you know, believe in, that you feel you're arguing abstractions. If you really want to argue that there's no place for child wage laws, if you want to argue that the great trusts, the great monopolistic trust of the 19th century is capitalism at its ideal, if you want to argue that unregulated capitalism is more competitive and creates more innovation than regulated capitalism, you know, then you're in a sense wanting to forfeit, you're wanting to suspend
the
20th century.
Wanting to raise a fundamental challenge. Yes, I hold all those things you ascribe to me, and I have argued them throughout my life. It's not like, oh, I just came up with these ideas. I'm 66 years old. I've spent the time since I was 17 arguing for and learning about those positions and why they are right.
Well, so and it's just a matter of misinformed for 66 years, one might say.
Right, but this is not just
only
about
since
pure,
I got to two.
This is not just about pure Ayn Randism. I mean, these are the principles at play in our current debates.
Yeah.
Today, this is. Wisconsin. Is Wisconsin a freedom debate, in your opinion, Ben?
Of course it's a freedom debate, because the right of unions to organize labor, to create a free market for labor that's a fair and competitive market, is what unionism is about. Unionism is not about state socialism. It is not about the command economy. It's precisely about workers using the marketplace to organize so that they can be competitive, they can be equal players in the contracts they sign with corporations. And when the state comes and in effect invalidates their right to participate in the workplace, in the marketplace, then I would argue the governor of Wisconsin is censoring and regulating capitalism and the market in a way that's deeply dangerous to the freedom, not just of those workers, but the freedom of all Americans.
Common ground on this point?
No, none at all. The premise here is, again, that economic power is political power, that a corporation, by virtue of the fact that it can offer you a job, has some kind of power over you, and you need to balance that by passing laws to restrict the freedom of contract between the employer and the employee.
Well, let's take the laws out. In your worldview, your definition of freedom in the private marketplace, could workers band together, create organizations
yes.
called unions, and make their own rules?
Yes, absolutely. But they can't force anyone to deal with them. They absolutely can organize, and I oppose right-to-work laws because they remove that freedom to organize.
We have a few minutes left in our preview debate of the Thursday night event, debating freedom in our society and how it's relevant to today's politics with Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute. And we did ask our listeners to call up and tell us the first thing that comes to their mind when they think of the word freedom. Guy in Bergen County, what do you associate with freedom?
Hey guys, great topic, obviously. When I think of freedom, the first thing that came to mind was choice. But then all of a sudden I realized that freedom's an ideal and you can't just go out and buy it. But since our laws in America are based on laws, you leverage for freedom. And if you have the money to pay for the law, that freedom becomes yours.
Guy, thank you. Fred in Queens, you're on WNYC.
Was that Fred?
Fred, yeah, it's you. What do you think of when you think of freedom?
The basic question that they posed at the beginning was, is do we have free will or don't we have free will? I would say, no, we don't have free will, but we act like we do because we're programmed to have it. We couldn't work otherwise. We'd sit on our butt and just run away waiting for something to happen. Of course, we couldn't exist that way. Therefore, the plan is that whoever programs us says we got to have free will, that we get programmed by our society, our genes, and so forth and so on.
Thank you very much. Chris in Sunset Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Freedom is the essential propaganda buzzword for American hegemony.
There you go. And he said it in just a few words. And there is going to be a foreign policy component to this discussion on Thursday night. Benjamin Barber, you've done a lot of foreign policy work, consulted all kinds of governments, even Libya for a time, when it looked like Gaddafi was going to get on the bandwagon So
it looks that way again, by the way. Saif Gaddafi is back in the news now, trying to make a piece in which his father goes. So I wasn't so far from wrong.
Do you,
4 weeks ago? But that's a separate issue.
Digress for 30 seconds with me. Do you think that's not just a distraction? Do you think that's a real deal that's really on the table?
If you believe in the 7 years' worth of work that Saif Gaddafi did before the uprising, then it's not a distraction.
MoMA.
It's very, very real. If you believe that was all cynical, the way the just caller maybe would think that everything's cynical, that we all have our interests and everything we say is just a way of rationalizing our interests, then you'd probably say I'm wrong. This is just another ploy.
Do you think people in Libya think of the same things when they think of freedom as Americans do when they think of it?
I think they think initially, and in her book on revolution, Hannah Arendt said this so beautifully, in that first exhilarating moment when people see the possibility of choice, being free from those who have been pushing them, being free from a tyrannical government, I think there's a kind of elixir of excitement. You and I, 4 weeks ago, did a program at the very moment when Mubarak left Egypt, and that one felt that tremendous excitement. That's an undeniable moment where people feel the possibilities and prospects of freedom.
You wanted to respond to one of the callers or to this?
Well, first to one of the callers who said we're programmed by our genes and so forth. He's programmed to say that on his theory, so it has no relation to logic or reality. What you were just saying, I think that it's true. The elixir of freedom comes from getting rid of one source of coercion. But if you don't have a philosophy, if you don't have the ideas, if you don't have positions on the kind of things that we're going to debate, you're not going to establish a free country. So you overthrow one dictator and another dictator is put in. I don't know that this is going to happen in Egypt or Libya, but I'm fearful.
Let's give a few more callers the last word for now, then we'll suspend until Thursday night. Michelle in Wappingers Falls, what's the first thing you think of when you think of freedom?
I think of freedom in relationships comes from trust, and when I think of freedom in the country, it brings to mind the right to bear arms.
The right to bear arms. It's a freedom, it's a right, and we're not going to get into the Second Amendment debate right now, but Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Freedom means?
I think of autonomy, and as your last caller said, though I don't agree about the Second Amendment, I think it is based on trust in the sense of being embedded in social relationships that are supportive, where one feels a connection so that autonomy is not just like banks throwing people out of their houses, which certainly is physical force to me. And I think, for instance, if you look at the social democratic countries in Europe, which have a lot more government involvement, I think if you looked at the individual lives of people, their daily lives, the choices that they make, you'd find a wider range of autonomy and a greater capacity to actualize that autonomy in making life decisions than in the United States, where people are fearful and end up with very defensive policies of blaming other people because of insecurities that we have.
Peter, thank you. I have to leave it there. And Harry, that's where you would take the most issue.
Yeah,
I
disagree with that totally.
That freedom can come from that security that a social democracy might offer. Very quick, Ben. Freedom
Let me
the
just quote
Second
Kant
Amendment.
Because I'm going to be talking about Kant. The folks at Ayn Rand are not happy with Kant. I'm very happy with Kant. Kant says freedom is the right of self-legislation, the right to be responsible for making the laws according to which we live. We live by laws, always. They might be somebody else's. They might be arbitrary rules. Or we can live by laws we give to ourselves. Freedom is self-legislation, the right to live by laws that we give to ourselves, that we choose for ourselves.
All right, listeners, you can get free tickets for our debate on freedom from what and for whom between our guest Benjamin Barber and Harry Binswanger, Harry from the Ayn Rand Institute, Ben from Demos. They'll be together and I'll be moderating Thursday night at 6, or is it 6 or at 7?
6.
At 6 o'clock at the Skirball Center at NYU. Get your free tickets on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. We also have a Freedom Quotes quiz there. See if you can identify some of history's famous quotes about freedom at itsafreecountry.org. Hope to see you all Thursday night. I know I'll see you too Thursday night. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
for a little
Brian.
Preview.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, New Jersey gets redistricted with a Democrat-friendly map. And then emotion in the workplace. When is it okay to yell and cry at work? A new book has some surprising answers.